Hi, and welcome to the Emerging Sounds of the Bazaar live, and to the welcome to the launch of the Emerge Bazaar. What's it all about then? Well, in a couple of minutes, I'm going to be talking to Paul Bailey and Steve Warburton about the ideas behind the Emerge Bazaar. But to those of you listening from around the world who aren't part of the Emerge project, Emerge is an innovative 28-month consortium project aiming to support and sustain a community of practice that will develop and exploit new emergent technologies for use in educational settings. Sounds good, doesn't it? But firstly, let's tell you a little about Sounds of the Bazaar. This is our fourth live broadcast in this series. We ran a weekend festival of live emerging sounds webcasting from Saturday to Monday. And if you missed the programmes, don't worry. You can find links to the podcast versions on the Emerge site. Well, to two of them anyway. We screwed up totally on Saturday, but that's all in the past. Now, why do I want to do live radio? Well, I think that the most eloquent reason I can explain is by actually referring to John Pallister, who's an IT teacher in Wosingham School in County Durham, and who participated in our show on Sunday and went on to join the Earthcast 24-hour webcast from around the world on Tuesday. Earthcast featured teachers and educators, but above all students from Portugal to Canada, South America, Germany, the UK, the USA, talking about the environment live on webcast radio. And here's what John said about the show. He said, "A strange thing happened today. Ordinary people from around our world collaborated to do the extraordinary. They adopted a philosophy that if they were not breaking the tools and technology, they were not trying hard enough. They tried pretty hard for 24 hours. A few things hung up on them, and a few things did not like working with each other. But what an amazing achievement. I listened to children of all ages and teachers from around the world talking to one another and broadcasting to anyone in the world that had an internet connection. I found myself listening to Earthcast this morning. I was rapidly drawn in to what was happening. The enthusiasm of the students from around the world was addictive and energising. I soon had a Year 12 student contributing, asking some of the presenters why were they flying around the world to attend so many conferences. He was answering questions from people somewhere in the USA and was being listened to by people all over the world. He went on to initiate a quite heated discussion about national energy policies. He was a student who 5 minutes earlier was simply having a conversation with friends in the common room, then found himself talking to the world from an ordinary classroom in County Durham at no cost." And John says, "What is in this kind of activity for learners? Well, just about everything you need to develop learners as effective participators. Young people actively engaging with issues which affect them and those around them." And that, for me, sums up better than I could say what community radio is all about. And I guess the other reason we wanted to produce a radio programme today was because to show that there are many different ways of using new technology for dialogue and interaction. And you can interact with this show. For those of you who are Emerge members, you can join the chat room from the Emerge Moodle event page. And to those of you who are not, well, I'm sorry about that. We had limited access to the chat room. But a big, big welcome to listeners from all over the world. And you can text me anyway on 00491797586, or email me, Graham10, that's Graham10, at mac.com, or Skype me. My Skype name's Graham Atwell, all one word. And I'll be reading out as much of your feedback live as I can, as I can take in as many boxes on my screen as I can. So, what's on today's programme? Well, first up, I'm going to be talking to Paul and to Stephen about the launch of the Emerge Bazaar and what it's about. And at some point in the programme, we're going to feature two of the Emerge projects, Moose and McFob. Plus, we got a phone in, or rather a Skype in, about the future of technology-enhanced learning. You get to participate. Just make sure that your Skype name's in my Skype list. No, this isn't a sad way of increasing my number of friends, honestly. Plus, we'll be launching the Sounds of the Bazaar competition with a great prize. And we got music from the wonderful Creative Commons Yamenda website. All our music today features a band called Le Yanitos, who are from an album called Exotica. And stay listening to the end for our surprise culture spot. I guarantee you won't be disappointed. Well, that's the lineup. You are listening to the Emerging Sounds of the Bazaar live. Live community radio. And now into our first musical break. I'll be back in about 90 seconds with Steve and Paul. Live on Skype on Live Sounds of the Bazaar to talk about the launch of the Emerge Bazaar. Steve, do you want to start? What's Bazaar all about?
Thanks, Graham. Exciting day. You must be happy now with your own radio show?
I've always wanted a radio show, Steve.
I thought so. Thanks. Yeah, the Emerge Bazaar. Well, just to give it in a nutshell, I think really what it is us responding to what we feel is a need for a community-orientated space for projects and for individuals to make themselves more visible and to share within that their skills, their expertise, and their innovation, and indeed services that they might have to offer.
And Paul, how are we going to do that?
How are you going to do that? Well, we're looking to set up a number of virtual platforms. I mean, Steve can probably talk more about exactly how we're doing that in terms of Second Life and hopefully through the Emerge site. But as well as those, we want to set up some virtual services as well to support the community and what they want to do. Do you want me to go on?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Steve, we were talking about that Second Life. I had a quick look at it just before the programme and it looks pretty cool. Do you want to tell us something about it?
Thanks for the feedback, Graham. Yes, we're using, as Paul says, we're developing across two platforms. So we're looking at community spaces. One of these is on the L platform, which if you want me to go into more detail after this, I can do. The other is to take advantage of a virtual space, a three-dimensional one. So we've been looking at Second Life as being an area we can do that. And there's many of the projects will know we have the Emerge Island. So we're using that as space to build a conceptual 3D version or instantiation of what we would call a bazaar, which is in fact a kind of marketplace. So we're using this bazaar metaphor as a kind of shopping area for projects to use their, this is a dissemination space for some of their outputs.
Okay. And Paul, what do you hope will come out of this?
We're hoping to engage more of the community in more of the activities. The community was initially set up with an ideas generation focus, pulling people together. Now we've got lots of ideas, lots of projects, lots of things happening. So part of the idea of the benefits realization is to try and extract out of that some of the, if you like, benefits that are coming out of the community and to be able to share them with the rest of the community. So it's a sort of hopefully growing snowballing effect that we can generate.
No, that sounds good. I mean, I've been doing some podcast interviews with some of the projects. I've been quite surprised at some of the things they're doing. But the problem seems to me, how do we link the projects together with the community? That's a question to either of you, really.
No, it's a good question as well, Graham. I think it's one that the Emerge team has been looking at, and I think that's part of the way, the philosophy behind the bazaar. So that's why we've got this kind of three-pronged approach. Having the bazaar area, the stores and marketplace kind of metaphor for projects to exchange, and I think Second Life is a nice environment for that because it gives a visual element to that where you can go and actually browse different projects. But we also have, as Paul was mentioning, that we are setting up this Dragon's Den service for innovative activity, and also the Ideas Forge as well. So the Ideas Forge will become a little bit like the heartbeat, the kind of pulse. So we want to kind of activate, stimulate conversation around key educational issues, key issues around technology and the merging of the two, and get the project to kind of debate and think of those around those. And hopefully we can see some future funded activity coming out of these.
And Stephen, one of the questions people are going to say straight away, sorry, Paul, I'll come back to you in a moment. One of the things people are going to say straight away is, that's all very well, but I don't have the skills to build a site in Second Life.
Now, that is a good question. So that's one we've been thinking about. And the nice thing is that in some of the projects, we already have some skills and services that will be made available to other projects who want to take advantage of this. So we have people there in the background who will be willing and will be able to help those projects get themselves established there. So what I'll be doing is putting details of that on the Emerge site so that people can go there and have a look at that in their own time.
Okay, and Paul, I just cut you off then. What were you going to say?
I want to say something more about the Dragon's Den service and the idea of the Ideas Forge services. Them being sort of initial experiments on trying to provide services to the community. The Dragon's Den, I know, was done very, very successfully for the original call as a face-to-face activity. I wasn't around then, but I hear good feedback on it. What we've been piloting is doing the similar thing in Illuminate as a virtual activity. So it's basically 30 minutes of a few people's time to actually listen to somebody's idea and give them some constructive feedback, which is a lot easier than getting together for a day. I know Steve is very keen to try this in Second Life. which is an experience I don't think I'm quite prepared or ready for yet.
Have you got your dragon's costume yet?
I did
really
find
have
one.
An avatar as a dragon.
In the bazaar area, yes. It's a breathing fire bit I'm having trouble with.
I'm sure Steve could do you a script.
And Paul, come to the fashion show tonight. Well, I'm sure we can find you a dragon's outfit.
I did find one when I was searching around in there. I've not tried putting it on yet. Perhaps that can be my my costume for the show.
Excellent. I can't wait to see it.
Okay. Thank you both then. So I'm sure we're going to be hearing a lot more about Emerge Bazaar. And, of course, one of the things we're hoping to do is to do more of these broadcasts and make some of these broadcasts perhaps a regular monthly event where the community can talk to each other. Okay. Thank you to Paul and to Steve. We're going to go into another musical break and I'll be coming back looking at the Moose Project from Leicester University. Welcome back to Emerging Sounds of the Bazaar Live. And remember that music you've been listening to is from Les Juventus. The album's called Exotica. And all the music is off the Yemendo website, which is supported by Creative Commons and is available under a Creative Commons license. Now, here's another reason for webcasting. We know not everyone can make the events live, but they're keen to present their ideas. And we've been talking to some of the projects who couldn't come along to this Emerge 3-day conference, but they were keen to share their ideas with you. And we've been podcasting with them, recording the interviews. And in the first of our two featured projects, I talked to Jai Mukherjee from the University of Leicester, who's working on the Moose project. I started out by asking him what Moose stands for.
Right, MOOSE stands for Modelling of Second Life Environments. Now, this is a next-generation technologies and practices project which is based on research, institutional development, and the experience of student learning that we at the University of Leicester are carrying out in partnership with the OU. We are very grateful to the Emerge stream for the funding we've received for MOOSE through JISC. Now, what MOOSE does is investigate the scaffolding and processes needed to enable groups of students in formal higher education environments to establish their socialization and engagement for more productive information and knowledge exchange and learning through, and most crucially, through Second Life. So that's what MOOSE is about.
And what sort of processes are those?
These are processes of engagement, of socialization, of sort of sharing knowledge, sharing information. So that's what MOOSE is about.
And how are you planning to do that? How are you planning to develop that? You're obviously doing something in Second Life. What sort of activities are you doing?
Yeah, we've chosen two distance learning courses, two existing distance learning courses, one at the Open University, that's on data, computing and information. This is a level one course, and another one at the University of Leicester at the Department of Archaeology and Ancient History. That's called Archaeological Theory, and it's a level two course. Now, on these two courses, we are basically creating new approaches which parallel the existing approaches and try and see how it works for the students. For instance, on the Archaeological Theory course, what we try and do, for instance, is where they would read a description of a ritual or a social structure, we try and create that in Second Life, where it gives them a sense of immersion in a simulated ritual experience, where they might see, for instance, a written description or a diagram of an artifact or a particular structure. We actually create that structure. In this case, it could be a particular kind of Sami tent, where you know the whole tent and its own inherent structures are created for students to explore it and interact with in Second Life.
Sounds cool. How difficult is it?
Not very difficult if, like in our team, you've got the skills of developing and building in Second Life. However, the difficulty, I suppose, lies in the fact that students are enabled to use Second Life. Students are also enabled to sort of make the most out of what is made available to them in Second Life.
Yeah, I'm interested in that one. How do you see students, like I suppose lots of people listening to this programme, I've got a Second Life account and I've got my avatar, and you'll be seeing me later today on the fashion show, although I don't think I'll win it. But really, I just sort of fly around a bit and look around. I don't really do anything much. How would you actually think people, students, can get the most out of Second Life?
Depends. There are several ways. One, the very basic element would be Second Life now has a lot of institutions or individuals offering learning content on Second Life. Now, these could take various forms. You could just go in there, read the text of what is being presented. If there is audio capability, you could possibly download the audio file that accompanies it. On the other hand, what we are trying to develop, as at least as part of the archaeology module, is some element of immersion to offer the student sort of an actual immersive environment where they can come in and interact with certain archaeological artifacts, which they might not otherwise perhaps be able to experience.
And I've seen quite a lot of presentations of Second Life at conferences and the like, and seen universities building their Second Life towers. And it seems to me they're essentially reproducing existing images of education, the classroom, within a more to use a virtual environment. And I'm just not sure, is there any real added value in that?
Yes, there would not be much added value in that, as you correctly pointed out. There is a totally different value in creating a Second Life virtual campus for marketing purposes, of course, where, you know, potential students could perhaps come in and have a look at, you know, what the campus looks and feels like. But that would be, in a sense, as you said, replication. Whereas here, what we're trying to do is to do things in Second Life that they would not be otherwise be able to experience elsewhere as part of their module.
Okay, I can see how that works for the archaeology students.
Yeah.
That makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
I think you said from the Open University, you've got a group of computer science students.
Yep.
And how are you planning to work with them in Second Life?
See, with them, it's different aspects of socialization that we're trying to find out. Whereas they might, in the current approach, use wikis to build collaborative projects, what we could do is, on Second Life, use an approach where trust building in-world prior to the collaboration exercises in Second Life. It could involve a combination of synchronous and asynchronous discussions in Second Life as well. You know, they could sort of perhaps view or collaborate on websites and critique them in Second Life in a way that they might not be able to in Second Life. So there's several kind of things that we are grappling with for there. You know, for a course that's typically sort of more not as artifact-based, let's say.
Yes. I'm quite interested in a question of identities and more to use of virtual environments.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we all grasp the basic closed situation, etc., but you're building your avatar, and your avatar, I suppose, has some kind of identity. But how does that affect the identity as a student?
One of the things that we're trying to find out more about, though that, I must say, is not the main focus. I mean, identity is not the main focus of this particular project. But again, I'm sure we when we come to disseminating results, we'll be able to throw some light laterally, you know, through the process of socialization on that. I'm aware of projects that are ongoing, that are focusing on the issue of identity in Second Life. But
yeah.
As I said, that is not one of our primary objectives in this project, at least.
But your view on it?
My views on it, yes, of course. The element of identity perhaps allows students to because they're not appearing as themselves in a traditional classroom situation, it might well sort of allow them to interact more, to socialize more, to perhaps ask more questions. There's an element of anonymity there, as a result of which, that could allow for more interaction, that could allow for more knowledge sharing, and such like. But then that would not be an opinion informed by research. It's just my point of view.
I'm not sure if any of us have got the research to have.
But as I said, there are projects ongoing. You know,
there are projects ongoing. You're right.
Yeah.
And what do you expect to get by the end of the project? What's your aim by the end?
Yeah, what we've listed are a certain set of deliverables. Among other things, we should have a set of guidelines for embedding Second Life or other such three-dimensional multi-user environments in institutional systems and policies. Perhaps a framework for SL moderating skills designed for teaching on Second Life, maybe an exemplar training course. We should have a certain number of, in this case 10, exemplar transferable activities or SL activities designed for these two particular modules and which could be adapted by teachers from other disciplines. A basic demonstrator, at the very least, in Second Life to show how learning spaces can be designed in such environments for promoting and enabling team activities and group projects, for instance. We're aiming to come up with guidelines for developing students' transferable skills through such environments, including teamworking, communication, decision-making, and collaboration. So these would be sort of roughly some of the things that we're aiming at as part of this project.
Good. I was quite interested. You said something there about institutional guidelines, I think.
Yes.
Are there issues to do with institutional policies and use of these environments?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Certain institutions do not provide access to Second Life as part through the institutional network, for instance, though other institutions do. Yet the same institutions also, you know, use Second Life, for, as I pointed out earlier, for marketing purposes. Now, you know, these, I mean, there are access issues, there are network issues, there are issues of usage to do with, you know, the clients who are using it. But at least in this case, what we're trying to find out is, can we develop certain institutional sort of recommendations for institutions, let's say, on how these can be best utilized in education, in the learning and teaching that's provided by the institution.
No, this sounds an extremely interesting project. If people want to find out more, where can they go?
Yeah, two things to say on that. First is that this is, well, for the lack of a better word, a kind of pilot study, as it were, two very different and disparate disciplines, as it were, to see what is possible on this. So it's a pilot study. We are actively trying to increase the scope of the project, look for funding to carry on the work across different disciplines, across and different learning approaches. To find out more, do please have your listeners visit our website, which is www.le.ac.uk/beyonddistance/moves.
Hi, it's Graham Atwell back here again. Many thanks to Jai for that interview. We actually interviewed him. Leicester don't support Skype. We actually ran that interview through a mobile phone, and it came out remarkably well. Well, it's kicked off quite a big debate around Second Life going on. Rebecca says, I can't cope with Second Life. I can hardly cope with First Life. On the other hand, Patsy says, you can just sit and eavesdrop on amazingly banal conversations, just like life, I guess. And I had a Skype come in from Stackadder, somewhere in London, I think, who says, isn't there really an accessibility problem about Second Life? And I think that's quite a problem for me. OK, we're going to go into another musical break now, and then we'll be coming back with the Sounds of the Bazaar competition. It's competition time. Make sure you've got a pen near you so you can write down the details of the competition, and there's great prizes. OK, into the music, Dirk.
I am looking at the fatmas of the Sahara. They're dancing in the moonlight of a red beer. I'm walking like a camel. I jump across the dunes. I drink a magic potion in the house of Prince Harun. I'm looking at the Fatmas of the Sahara. They're dancing in the moonlight of a red beer. I'm walking like a camel. I jump across the dunes. I drink a magic potion in the house of Prince Harun. In the cavern of Ali Baba, I am twisting with a Berberian called Mustafa. As I open Sesame, as I Mohammed Rafi, I am landing on a Persian carpet just around the street. I am driving in the cavern of Ali Baba, I am twisting with a Berberian called Mustafa. As I open Sesame, as I Mohammed Rafi, I am landing on a Persian carpet just around the street.
It's Graham Atwell back here again. Many thanks to Dirk Stierglitz, who's doing the sound engineering on this programme. We had a bit of a panic during that first interview, the first non-live section. For some reason, it started sounding twice through his machine, but we quickly rushed and found it was OK on the live stream. OK, it's competition time here, live on Sounds of the Bazaar. The competition's open for a week. Here's the rules. I want replies emailed to me, that's graham10@mac.com, sent on a voice thread. In fact, you can do it any way you like. As long as I get it, you can phone me, you can even write to me. So the competition's open till midnight next Friday. Now, part of Emerge Bazaar is about the Ideas Forge, a brains trust, if you like. And for our competition, what we want you to tell us is the learning application you'd like to be invented that hasn't. Now, I'm not talking about technology now. I'm not talking to about you being realistic. I want you to think up what would be the best thing we could possibly have for learning. Babelfishes are ruled out. That's already in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. But I'll give you an example from an old friend of mine. Well, he isn't so old, actually. He's about 16 now, but I've known him since he was one. He's called Owen Gray, and he comes from Blackwood in South Wales. I've learnt a lot from Owen. Kids have got great ideas. In fact, I have to break to a bit of a story here. When my daughter, Athyn, was about 8, she asked me, "Graham, before we had electricity, how did you run your computer?" I have to say, I found it mighty hard to answer that one. It makes you think. Anyway, at the age of 8, Owen came up with a great application. He called it an O-hole. And what an O-hole was just a transporter. You'd walk into this round, big O-hole, and you'd be teletransported, beamed up, Scotty, if you like, and move to the place you want to go, very much like in Second Life, but in real. And I want you to think of the educational equivalent, if you like, the learning equivalent of the O-hole. No limitations of technology, but what you'd like. Skype me, text me, email me. And now I said a prize, didn't I? And here for a prize, and I'm not sponsored by the Wales Tourist Board, honest, for your prize, there's a bottle of Welsh whiskey. Yes, you didn't know Wales made whiskey, do you? Well, we make some of the best whiskey in the world. And for those of you who don't drink whiskey, I'll give you the equivalent in book tokens. And Josie, the second prize I'm promising is an Emerge T-shirt. I hope we've got some left. So you've got 8 days. Who knows? You could pitch it to the Dragon's Den at the end of it. Now into the next musical break. This is Live Community Radio. You're listening to the Emerging Sounds of the Bazaar. And when I come back, I'm going to be doing the phone-in or Skype-in for the next session. Over to you, Dirk. To the live bit. These are the bits always make me nervous with Skype. I'm going to be talking to some of you, very short chats because time is going, on where you see the future of technology-enhanced learning. But first, a few comments of I'm loving watching the chat. David says, "Before we had electricity, I had to watch TV in the dark." I love that one. And this morning I was in the university in Bremen in the computer building, which is a horrible 8-storey block. And there on the left was a great notice, I thought, stenciled on the left, which said, "The only good system is a sound system." And of course, there's a bit of a thing about using English in the German language, especially a lot of the shops like to give themselves English names. And I loved this one. There's a hairdresser's shop says, "Grows on your heads." Well, it doesn't grow on mine, but I thought, what a great name for a hairdresser's shop. OK, into the chats. Where do you see the future of technology-enhanced learning? And I'm going first to Dave Cormier from Canada, I think. Dave, ringing you now. Coming, Dave. I can't actually hear it ringing, which is very interesting. Ah, yes, we've got Dave on now. Hi, Dave.
Mr. Atwell, how are you today?
I'm very well, thank you, Dave, and I'm very relieved that the system's working. Oh, I've forgotten to unhijack one of the feeds. Sorry if that sound was blurry for a moment there. Yeah, I'm very well, thank you, Dave. You're going out live on Emerge Community Radio. This is part of the 3-day Emerge conference. So, Dave, how do you see the future of technology-enhanced learning?
I think, first, I have to start with a caveat. Most of my research is focused on areas where the knowledge space is really a moving target. And I think that the future of technological learning is going to be seen there first. So stuff like educational technology, stuff like physics, stuff like marketing, where the canon of knowledge is really that moving target. And when we're all trying to learn stuff where what it means to know is changing all the time, we have to kind of change our approach to trying to do that. One of the problems that comes along with that is that we end up in multiple communities. And I think the technologies that facilitate participation and membership in multiple communities are really where the interesting and also the challenges in the future of educational technology really are. So ways in which I can work centrally in one space where I have a blog and I have a wiki, I have all the stuff where whatever technology is coming next year, where all of my work, I can go to one place and do it, and yet all of that work gets aggregated to multiple communities that I'm participating in, and then I have a way to be able to follow all those conversations without having to multiply myself in some way. Where those nodes of knowledge end up being received, and certainly the Emerge program is a perfect example of that. People are kind of parts of different projects, and they're aggregating content out in openhabitat.org, where we've set up our own space for our project. Really is an example of that, where we're all blogging in our own place and we're creating a knowledge node out there. So if you're using MUVEs in the way that we're using them, you can go to that place and see what 12 people are talking about in it. We have our own sort of knowledge base accumulating, and I think the facilitation of that experience of working centrally, aggregating globally, and being able to create and participate in the creation of multiple knowledge nodes is where the future of technology is going, particularly for those places where the knowledge canon is unstable.
How much do you see the technology will be able to bring those nodes together, and how much is it going to be facilitated? You said facilitation. How much is that teachers doing the facilitation, and how much is it technology, Dave?
I think the technology, I mean, we have the technology now. And certainly, I mean, intelligent use of RSS feeds can do almost everything I just stated right now. And I think teachers and facilitators are almost not what we're looking at as we move towards the future. I take the example of what Alec Kouros did this year with his master's program out at the University of Regina. He was a leader, not a teacher. He walked in there and said, "This is my professional," to his students, "this is my professional community. This is how one participates in this community." And in learning how to participate in that community and in showing best practice and sort of showing them how he learned, they ended up learning how to do it themselves, started their own blogs, and picked parts of the community that worked for them. So I think that's the place of the teacher as we move forward, is doing it all the time. And that's the most important part here. The teacher ends up being a core member of a particular knowledge stream. So I become a teacher in the educational technology field simply by the fact that I focus a lot of my effort there, whereas somebody else who doesn't, needs to know something about it, ends up becoming a learner and finding sort of somebody who does it a lot as a model to learn enough about that community to be able to participate. So we're all multiple members in multiple communities at different levels all at the same time. And that idea of multiple membership, I think, And those membership levels are really the gradient by which we end up deciding who is a teacher and who is a learner.
Thanks very much, Dave. I'd like to talk to you all afternoon, but we're behind on our schedule here. We said an hour. Sorry if those listeners, we're going to overrun a bit. But thanks, Dave, and I hope we can pick this up in another node of communication. Okay, we're going to move on, and I'm going to ring Nicola Whitten now. Nicola seems to be online. Be warned, any of you in Skype, my Skype, this might get wrong. Come in, Nicola. Hi, Nicola. Nicola, you hearing me? Nicola doesn't seem to be replying at the moment. She was.
Hello, Graham.
Hello, Nicola. Welcome to Sounds of the Bazaar Live. Nicola, where do you see the future of technology-enhanced learning going?
Well, I should start off by admitting that I'm a bit biased in that I'm very interested, excited by, and my background of research is into games-based learning. So obviously I'd like to say that everything is going to move into that field, but to be honest, I don't think that's the case, and I don't think it's necessarily a good thing. But where I think technology-enhanced learning can go is in terms of increasing student engagement, moving from a very much sort of teacher-centered, still very text-based type of learning environment into virtual worlds. And by those, I don't just mean multiplayer online worlds, but virtual simulated worlds, virtual worlds that are partly online, partly offline, that allow students to experience the real-life type of activity that they'll be learning about, to actually learn by doing in a multi-sensory way, and to have the types of assessment and collaborative activities that match that and support that. So I'd like to think that's where it's going. The other area, I suppose, I would like to see it going is much, much greater personalization of technology choice, a move away from virtual learning environments to integrated environments in which students and teachers can decide the types of technology that they want to use and can use them in a synergistic way.
And do you think that that is going to happen? Because there's still a lot of pressure from institutions to those centralised virtual learning environments.
I think it will happen probably not in the next 5 years, possibly in the next 10. And I think it will be the pressure of so many simultaneous systems that there will be some need for some sort of coherence. And really, where we have a situation where an institution decides to go with one environment that doesn't necessarily, that is, I think, generally quite a lot behind what is state of the art and what the students are using and what's necessarily appropriate for pedagogy, for teaching and learning, then we're going to get to a situation where we have to have greater integration between systems and greater student choice.
OK, thanks, Nicola. That's great having you on the programme. I'm going to move on fast.
My pleasure.
Really short. OK, time for one more interview. Look, Christina Costa has been incredible help with us on the programme. She's been the one that we've been doing all the sound checks with before. She didn't know I was going to bring her in, but I'm going to ring her for a quick 2 minutes. Christina, are you there? Can you spare your time for your multitasking? I can see she's in the chat room. Hi, Christina.
Hi
Christina. Same question to you as the rest of them. What do you see as the future of technology-enhanced learning?
Oh, I don't know. I still don't know. I think it has to do something with people and not the machine or the software. But I don't know. Really, this is a good question, and you got me thinking there, but I do need to think.
Well, you're
more.
A great people person, aren't you? Because you spend a lot of time going across systems, talking to people.
Yeah,
see that talk happening? I mean, is that what the role of a teacher will be in the future?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But that's a big change from now. That's not standing in front of a classroom talking.
No, it's about being available through multiple channels. And listen more than talking, I think. I think that's the biggest challenge, is about listening to the kids and to kind of make them feel respected and challenge them by believing in them and challenging what they believe to be their limits. I think that's the, but if I don't know if you need another application, you just need to make to use the applications that are available right now and make them open and available for the students, because you know, sometimes we kind of shut down the systems because we don't want the students in the channels that we are using to communicate with our peers. But for me, that's the challenge, is to make those channels available and to listen more than to talk to the students. Is about listening to them and engage them and lead the way by believing in them and by respecting them.
Okay, thanks, Christina, and thanks for all your help in getting this show together.
No, thank you so much.
Okay, that's all the time we got to chat to people here, because we're going into a musical break now, and we'll be coming back talking to Mike Ward from the MacFob Project. Over to you, Dirk. Graham Atwell back here again. Now look, I know some of you have probably been getting tired, it's been a long day, but I promise you we really do have a great surprise feature at the end of the show. I've got one more interview now with Mike Ward from Southampton University, and then we'll be into musical break and then our surprise feature. Anyway, Mike Ward's working the MacFob Project. Now I was trying to get this programme prepared well in advance, so I organised the interview with Mike last week. Bit of a problem where I was in Bologna, but I had sort of got a wireless connection, and all the others went off to a typical Italian long lunch break. Great, I thought. No problems. Quiet. I've got the room to myself. The air conditioning unit was a bit loud, and then there were scooters bombing up and down outside, but we tried anyway. And then I went to listen to it the day before yesterday. Disaster. Half the interview was missing. Don't know what happened to my sound recording unit. And even then, my sound was truly awful. So I got back hold of Mike, and he thankfully agreed to re-record the interview yesterday after the end of the Emerge conference. Thanks very much, Mike, for the short notice. And thanks to Dirk as well for pre-processing this interview this morning. And there we've got a text message coming in. I'll read it out to you after the next break. I started out by asking Mike what the MacFob Project was about.
I can. It's all about multimedia, audio or video, and about annotation or synchronised annotation, which we've coined the phrase synnotation. And the idea is, at the basic level, you could bookmark a particular part of a recording or a section of a recording. You could take some notes and link it to a particular part of a recording, whether it was a podcast or a recording of a lecture. You could tag a particular section if you wanted to. You can link to different sections. And the concept is, at the moment, most people regard audio and video as something you just sit back and listen to or watch. And the analogy I use is that if you had a textbook and it had no page numbers, it had no index and no contents page, you would find it very hard to find information and use it. And that's the situation with audio and video. It's more like a narrative storybook where you open the first page and you read the story and then you finish it. So the idea is to make multimedia more interactive and more useful for learning.
And without going into too much detail, can you tell us how you're going to do that?
Yes, it's all about timings. The idea is that if you can note down a particular timing in a media stream and you can link whatever annotation you're doing to that timing, then you should be able to go back to the media at that particular time. We're also using transcripts or captions, as they're called in America, or subtitles, as they tend to be called on television, where the idea is that you actually have the text transcript of what's being said, and that is synchronized with the recording, which means that you can actually select a section just as you select a section of a Word document. And people are used to annotating Word documents, doing track changes, highlighting sections. If you try and do that without the text of the transcript of the speech, there's a problem, because anyone who's tried to edit or move through audio or video, it's a trial and error thing. You've got to press play, wait till you get to the bit, and then wind back until you find the right bit. Because media, like audio and video, is serial. You can't see it until it's appeared, whereas text, you can see everything. And so you can scan it and select things. You can also search text. So if you want to search audio, it's very, very difficult. But if you have the text transcript of that audio, you can just search in a browser using the normal search. And when you find the bit you want, you can press play, and then it will replay the recording from that point.
The big job is auto-generating the text scripts then?
Yeah. We're using some speech recognition technology to do that, which does need some editing. But you can use whatever method you want. You can just do manual captioning, get somebody to transcribe the actual recording, or you can try and use speech recognition. You need good microphones and good quality audio for the speech recognition to work well.
But presumably it's a coming technology.
It is. It's used all over the place. If a lot of media sites use it for search, because if you think about it, there's masses of audio and video on the web, and a lot of companies have a lot of audio and video, and it is very difficult to search. So if you can get a transcript of that using speech recognition, then even if it's not 100% accurate, you can still use it very well for search. And the spin-off of that is the accessibility issue, that people who are hard of hearing or deaf require a transcript caption, and also people whose first language isn't the language that's being spoken will find it quite often much easier to read what was said than to try and listen to the accent and the way people are talking. So it has a inclusion and accessibility spin-off as well.
And who's your potential users, at least in your test development phases?
Well, we have a lot of interested users. We talk to the podcasting user group at the university, and these are people who are using podcasts at the moment. A wide range of podcasts. We've got somebody who's producing training material for students in the library who uses narrated PowerPoints at the moment. And the MacFob system will allow people to produce an index into the recording. So that's one user group. We've got nursing, we've got other faculties, we've got computing, and we're hoping that from the initial users, once we've got some demonstrations, then more people will want to use it. At the moment, we're targeting people who already make recordings, either video recordings or audio recordings, and saying, if you give us the recordings you're already making, we can enhance them, and then you can use them in a more interactive way. We're also going to make it available to the Emerge community, and we've had quite a bit of interest from people within the Emerge community as well.
Well, you certainly record me as one of your potential interested users, for sure. Well, the audio,
yes.
I'm making these days.
Your name's down on the list, Graham.
Brilliant. And just one last question. Where's that name, MacFob? What does that mean?
Right. Well, that actually stood for Multimedia Annotation and Community Ontology and Folksonomy Building.
Oh, my gosh.
The idea was it's going to be a multi-user system, and therefore people can look at each other's notes and the other's tags. So you get the idea of a folksonomy, a tagging folksonomy, but also the fact is if it's a subject area and everybody is tagging with their own terms, actually using the official terms for the subject domain, which officially would be called an ontology, makes it easier to use the system. And the problem is, with all these tagging systems, because people can use whatever words they want, even if they mean the same thing or they might be plural or whatever, when you try and search, you tend not to find like-minded tags, because if someone's used a different tag, keyword, you don't find it. So the idea of an ontology is trying to structure them in some way. We're actually going to call the application Synote, which stands for Synchronized Note-Taking. And we're calling, as I said earlier, the whole idea, we're calling it Synotations, which stands for Synchronized Annotations. So you'll be pleased to hear that MacFob is the project, but the application is going to be called Synote.
Sounds fantastic. And you'll be making it available to the Emerge community as soon as you can.
Yeah, we're hoping to, you know, release an initial prototype, you know, as soon as possible to get feedback on the actual development.
Okay, big thanks to Mike for that. And we're going to a musical break, and we'll be back with our surprise last item. It's the last poet in Oxford, Music Dirk. It's the last item on Sounds of the Bazaar Live. And yes, one of you in the chat room, Josie, you guessed, it's George Roberts, the last poet in Oxford, who's going to read us one of his poems. George, what are you going to read us? Welcome to the show.
Hello, Graham. Graham, I've been thinking a lot about identity, community and representation. That is what we show people of ourselves. That's how we act out our personal policies in public spaces, if you like, do our politics. And these are things in what I write. And so also is transgression and disturbance and resistance and praise. And a lot of the things that I write are sort of after the 9 o'clock watershed kind of pause, but I'll do something that is called Greaser for you now. Is that
looking
okay?
Looking forward. Sounds really cool, George. Away you go.
Okay, this is called Greaser. Just one word. Greaser, back in the old country where I come from, was sort of a pejorative term that you'd use for the kids with greasy hair that spent most of their time underneath cars instead of doing their school lessons or whatever you might have preferred. But so anyway, this is Greaser. Here we are all talking about working out. I'm worn again. I'm wearing in. I'm wearing thin, too. Swarfiga, hair gel, coal tar solutions, neat's foot and barber wax proof, oiling the chain wheels and easing my eczema with E45 goo. Just another greaser in carpet slippers. And the greaser in the slippers is who? Engine economy, greasing the engines of trade, Bristol slavers and Broken Hill ravers, easing myself away through turnpikes and H-gates, euro exchange rates, it's a bunghole blender's stew, teaching science like it's banking, poetry like it's making any difference at all, not football, baseball, Yankee Man United, one-handed leap save, but cycling St. Mary's Street in the morning sunshine, very merry 1st of May. Guy backs out in a bright yellow Ferrari. Have you ever noticed how bright yellow Ferraris are always driven by little ugly guys? Now, I don't know if this little ugly guy was a little ugly guy, but his little ugly guy sure was driving. Grease Monkey Spunky getting rubber in third with a high, tight engine whine, carburetor whistle, wetting the wind with his bird. So before you, Johnny T in Alphabet City, categorizing the word, remember your greaser in carpet slippers is running this world. Or, is she up in the high atlas, Sierra Maestà or Hindu Kush, inadequately shod, fed, cloaked, or armed, exposed to a power for good? Elemental differences, molten indecision, oxymoron, power, good? Typing on my Macintosh, hope it, I certainly would. I am definitely certain that, certainly, maybe, the future will come true in any way you want it, no matter what it is you do, if you remember that in your heart there's a part of that little greaser kid that's you in the yellow Ferrari or J.K. Jamiroquai hat, Batman, Buffy, Moneypenny, Lara Croft, 0072, Napoleon Solo is Solomon Zero. Get that and you're my Doctor Who. Techno mixer, grease palm fixer, everyone's taking a bite. Ricin on a brolly tip, oilers on a leaky ship, ruling class taking fright. Engine economy, grease in the engine of trade, Bristol slavers and Broken Hill ravers, easing myself away. Not football, baseball, Yankee, Man United, one-handed leap save, but cycling, St. Mary's Street, in the morning sunshine, very merry 1st of May. Thank you.
No canned applause, I'm afraid, so that was pure Emmanuel George. That was magic.
Thank you
so much. Thanks a lot, George. See you. And that was the Sounds of Bizarre's own poet, George Roberts, the last poet in Oxford. Brilliant. And they're saying great claps coming in on the chat, George. That was absolutely lovely. What a great way to play us out. And this, sadly, is the end of the show. We've overrun by 3 minutes. I think it's time to thank people. Thanks to everyone who came on the show. Thanks to everyone who's listened to the show. If you didn't catch it, well, if you did catch it, because you will be hearing it, we're going to make it available as a podcast. It will be out by tomorrow. Big thanks to two people, I think. A special thanks to Christina Costa, who's helped us so much with the sound checks. Christina, can you hear us and all that rubbish? Oh, thanks to everyone who turned up for the Sunday show, which didn't work out well, but stuck with us to the end. And finally, great thanks to Dirk Stierglitz, who's stood there sweating on the microphone. He's waving to you all now, and done the sound mix and sorted out all the feeds and made this show a possibility. I love it. Live radio, live community radio, live Sounds of the Bazaar. Keep watching on the Emerge site for details of the next show. I'm not going to do this every week, but we'll be doing regular monthly shows, I hope, from now on. This is Graham Atwa heading off to the pub and saying, a great show, and it's not yet. Don't forget the fashion show tonight. I've got a fabby new outfit for it. And this really is the end. This is Graham Atwell signing out from Emerging Sounds of the Bazaar live.
Del Carnaval. Del Carnaval. Del Carnaval. Del Carnaval.